Aloha. There you go. It's much better than hello, right? Hi there. Or in Atlanta, no, it's, hey, how y'all doing? Right? How y'all doing? I used to live in Charlotte, so I got that down. Welcome. Let's check to make sure you're in the right place. Session BRK3264, exam prep 70-534, Architecting Azure Solutions. I am your host and facilitator, Mark Grimes. I work for Microsoft, and I just, as a hobby, have been an MCT for nearly 20 years. But I'm an alumni status now because I'm not living, breathing that day in, day out. But let's a little bit more about me, because it's all about me here. About Mark, there's my vacation in Hawaii with Mickey. So that's my postcard I made. And I live in the state of Michigan, the only state you can do this with a hand. I live down there. I talked about the MCT-ness. I've been at Microsoft, just celebrated 6 years. And before that, 5 years with another little gold partner, so Jet and Capgemini. Doing a little bit of everything. I am a big blogger. I will tell you this, keep an eye out. This deck is chock full of resources, lots and lots of resources to help you pass the exam. I will try to do it pretty closely after the end of the session, both the last one, 70-533, and this one. I'll post the slides. So aka.ms/my name, Mark Grimes, or what I am, allergic to code. So I'm going to sell t-shirts for that soon. I have two special websites, both for the exam and for the real world. And I've made these upon numerous deployments. And a little short story I told last session. Certification, whether you agree with it or not, hopefully you agree with it because you're here for a reason to take the exam. Some people are told to take an exam and they're not sold on it. But let me tell you what my thought is. If I have an exam and I have the experience, it's all good, right? It's a benefit. So I've taken all this stuff from the customers and I have the aka.ms/azure/shortcuts and the aka.ms/azure/ISOP guides. These are kind of stuff that you can find out there. Oh, but what I was going to say about, I know I had a story to go with the certification. My first 4 years at Microsoft, I did nothing but pretty much ADFS and Federation. In fact, I run the Worldwide Identity Technical Community inside of Microsoft, so I'm very well connected with a lot of the technical people in identity. But a couple years ago, I took the Azure certification exam, this one first, and as a result, it got me into the Azure Center of Excellence, and as a result, I do nothing now for the past 2 years but Azure deployments. So it literally has made a career changer for me. And that's my lesson learned. I tell people from my career and my life is you have to be agile, just like you have to be in the cloud, and you have to be constantly evolving and changing. And if you're not, you're going to be stuck in a dead-end job doing the same thing the rest of your life. And if you're happy with that, that's okay. But me, I like new different things all the time. So this world of Azure, and of course, we know how much it's changing and evolving. So it keeps you on your toes, that's for sure. And I'm also on Twitter, @MarkBGrimes. So whenever I make a new shortcut, which I'll probably post one tonight. I'm going to see if it's available. If I get aka.ms/exam prep, I will. I try to grab them all when I can. And I tweet them, and then you can get the quick shortcuts to my updates. No time for questions, because I will fill up the time entirely. But if you have questions afterward, we'll please address them. But really, it's not here about questions. It's really for me to give you some tips and tricks about doing the exam and getting ready for it. So here's what I tell people, the way I create all of my certification sessions, which I've been doing these for a long time, even long after I was at New Horizons for 10 years, that's where I started my training career, is this is the way I build the deck. I look at the exam objectives. It's really easy, folks. aka.ms/70-534 will take you to the exam objectives for this. You must know what's on the breakdown. I built this deck from that. Categorically, section by section, and then topic by topic. I cannot put everything in there. It would be 500 slides. But what I try to do is pick a few here and there and give you kind of the best of some tips and tricks. Most people, if you've done your due diligence, will do pretty darn well, but usually will miss by 3 to 5 questions. My goal is to get you those 3 to 5 questions. I cannot promise this, but I had a Microsoft consultant who had never touched Azure once. Took this particular one I said in the last session, it was actually this session, and he studied the deck, studied the links, and he passed it. I cannot promise that to you. He was a very smart guy, but it is possible. Okay, so what's the level of effort? I told this in the last session. The level of effort, here it is. If you've never touched it, I would say 40 to 60 hours at least. 40, so that's a good solid week, and we all have day jobs, right? So figure 40, 60 hours, a couple hours a night, break it down section by section. If you are, the last session I had one of my customers, they're really smart guys that were here, and you guys are too, I know, but they've been doing Azure for a long time. Well, he's back here, one of them here. Yeah, so hi, customer. So these guys are smart. I was really engaged with them. They've been doing it. They're immersed. They probably can go in there and take it. If not, they might miss by a couple questions and get there really quickly. So they're very little effort, you know, 10, 20 hours max. If you're somewhere in the middle, like I was two years ago, I've done Federation, I've done some Azure AD Sync and Connect, you know, you're probably in the middle, 20 to 40 hours. So I did a deep dive on just knowing what these things are, these topics. This is the 50,000 foot view exam. The last one I did, 533, the infrastructure, and 532 are deep dive into those things. Now, every once in a while, this exam will kind of go, whoa, we fell into a crevice there. But generally, you need to know what it is, what it does, why do I care about it. And this is a design exam. So if you've never had an exam, design exam like in the past, it works like this. You get 3 to 4 case studies. Each case study, you have a bunch of questions. Once they're closed out, you cannot go back. Here's my exam tip on that. When you have a design exam, here's my new approach, and it's worked out pretty well for me, and I would advise it still. When you get that design exam, go right for the questions. Don't waste your time reading the scenario. Why? Because A, you may be able to answer some of those without reading the scenario at all, and B, those that you can't, now you know what to look for and scan through when you're reading. It's a much more effective. Take an exam is all about time management. Utilizing the time to get what you need. If you don't know it, mark it, come back to it, right? But on a design exam, you can't do that once you leave that scenario. So in the scenario, go to the questions first. You'll probably be able to answer half of them. Then you know what to scan back and go through, okay? So I made this deck based on the exam objectives, broke it down, have lots of links, lots of resources. I will put this on my blog, ak.ms/MarkGrimes, which will be here this afternoon. I'll get it as soon as I can. So that's 4 key links. That second link is an old one, but I actually do have, if you can't wait and you've got to have some of these resources now, on my blog, there's also aka.ms/certification/7534. That is actually 18 months ago. It wasn't a year ago. It was 18 months ago. I did this at Ignite in Chicago. And of course, a lot of things have changed. So some things will be good, but there is my deck with a lot of the resources. But what you'll be missing are some of the newest, latest, greatest things about ARM, Azure Resource Manager, that we didn't really talk about so much there. And then, of course, the shortcuts and the IaaS Ops Guide. Oh, so this is a new one I did not put in the last one, but this is just a pretty picture talking about if you get the three exams, 532, 533, and this one, you now can become an MCSD. I said MCSA before. It's actually MCSD, Microsoft Certified Solution. Wait, a developer? Or just architect. MCSC. That's weird. That's the developer thing. Made a shortcut to it. If you want to find out more information, I'm not going to talk about all the details, but that's pretty cool. Little caveat emptor. If you're going to try to do all this, you really got to be deep in dev because the 532. Very little time for questions, but I'll take one.
Quick question. Can you see this on demand in the previous session?
Can you see what?
Yeah,
they record everything. Yeah, so it'll be. And if they don't post it, I will as soon as I have access to it. So that's what I did with the last Ignite. The last Ignite's actually recorded up there. Okay. This one I did for this, I'm not going to dwell on this, but the point is whether you're looking at 532, 533, or 534, the categories are all the same, pretty much. And that's, I did this at Ignite. I was like, wow, they both talk about web apps and storage and networks. And this is two different exams, but the difference is deep on the 533 versus higher up. I got a scenario, I got to read it. Now, in addition to those case studies too, and I don't know if it's always the case, but it was my experience, and I've heard other people, you get 3 to 4 scenarios, but then like in the middle, you'll get like 20 questions just out of nowhere. And some of those may be like, what's the subnet notation I talked about in the last thing, right? So some of those will get a little bit deep. In a particular area, but generally it's all about the design scenarios that are most of the questions. Okay, and that's the point there. I showed this last session, but some quick tips about what to buy or use. Should I get a book or not? If you like paper and highlights, scratch, scribble, you got to touch that paper still, go buy a book. Do you need to? No. It's all on Azure.com. The only caveat I tell people, if it says preview, if it says just came out GA, probably not on the exam. So be careful about those things. If it's really old ASM, so ASM is Azure Service Management. Whenever you go to the new portal, it says classic. Classic means old ASM, Azure Service Manager, based on XML, versus the new ARM, Azure Resource Manager, which whenever it says Resource Manager, that's the new stuff. It's based on ARM templates and JSON object notation. So you got to be careful about those. But stick to the exam objectives. That's the key thing if you go on the Azure website. Also, you get free prep exams across the hall. Absolutely free, folks. These things are not cheap. Here's my tip for taking that. Pick the category you think you're weak on. Load it up. Say, I want all the questions on storage because I don't do storage. Give me all. And I just put like a number, 120. So there's only 49 questions. Okay, great. I got 49 questions. I click end. And then I look at the answers, why the right were right and the wrong were wrong. And that's how I study. Now, I made a mistake in saying this, but actually you get the bonus here. So what I did, and this is nothing I'm stealing from those practice exams because they were all public links. I did that for you already. And guess what? The links are on this deck. So you don't even have to do that now. You can applaud for that. That was good. So I grabbed all those links and I delivered this internally this summer, and I haven't checked since then, but I just checked them then and I got rid of the bad links and fixed the new links. So the links that go to those things about why they're right and why they're wrong are all here. So they're on this deck, which I will post on ak.ms/Mark Grimes. Before you press start, so here's the way I tell people to study is there's always gonna be some stuff that you just can't get in that brain, it won't stick. And I got to do something. So I make a crib sheet, and I write all people seem to need data processing, 11111110, that kind of stuff. And then what I do is I get that in my head, that cheat sheet, which I don't want to think about when I'm doing an exam. Before I click start, they give me a free piece of paper. I write it down, and then I've got those little quick notes, right, for some stupid mnemonic or whatever works for you to remember that thing. You can do that. You can dump it, but you can't walk in with a single thing, but you can dump notes right away. Categorically speaking, these are the exam objectives, what we're going to look at. Again, pretty similar topics to the 533, except for we got the word design. So they're going to give a scenario. Why would I choose this? Don't need to go uber deep. In some cases, do you know what media service looks like if they put it in your face, right? Or they ask you something about it? Or when would I use CDN versus Traffic Manager? Well, if you don't know what those two things are, you can't even decide. But if you know what they are, okay, now what are some basic options I have to select? That will probably help me out. Hybrid identity is Azure Active Directory. Storage, design advanced application. That was an area I had to learn because I'm not an app dev guy, right? My current customer, I've gone from IaaS to deep PaaS. So things like, and this is real world and also exam world, do I want application service environment or do I want service fabric? Well, I don't know. What's the difference? I don't know. You better know. So this is real world stuff and exam world stuff you need to know. Design Azure web apps. Oh, by the way, so with a couple of you that came from the last session, I will remind you there's about a 30 to 40% overlap. So pardon my repeat, but it's all good to hear it again, right? Designing, management, monitoring, business continuity strategies. So there's some things in here mentioned. And I know and understand not all of you love and use everything that we make at Microsoft. That's okay. I'm good with that. But if you don't love and use System Center, some people don't. Some people have their own solutions. You better know it for this. And I don't need no deep again. I need to know categorically. What are the different things that System Center offers? What would I use DPM versus SCOM versus SCCM? If those are foreign to you, well, just find out what they are, what they do, why I would use it in a particular scenario. And that's all you need to know right for the exam. That's it, right there. I thought that was great. I saw that in one of the overviews. It takes like a minute to load because there's so many images in there. But I grade out this stuff. So the stuff I grade out, so this is like the big, you know, platform services and everything they do. But I can look at almost everything in there that's not in gray. And those are kind of topics type stuff. So I just put that in for a scare factor. I better go study. All right, let's knock these down. So here's my, I brought you postcards from my trip in Hawaii. So that was Kaanapali Beach in the sunset. So the high-level stuff, first part's kind of fluffy, but stuff you actually saw some of this stuff on day one. So Global Foundation Services, which someone corrected me last night, it's not called Global Foundation Services anymore, but they still ask it on the exam that way if they do. Virtual networks, Azure Compute, VPN, ExpressRoute, and Azure Services. And the Azure Services, again, it's kind of like that last picture. If you saw a service and they talk about it or ask about a need, would you know which one to select? It's pretty straightforward. But there's so many services, you really need to know them. And of course, what did that number go up to? The 36 is now 42, right? They just showed that on the opening day. So data center architecture, of course, we're proud of the fact. I tell customers this all the time. We have the single largest wide area network, period, in the world. Seen news, they've been laying fiber all over the place. Lots of data centers, 42 regions. We have 2 regional data centers per geographic, which provides high availability fault tolerance. So when you select these options like geo-redundant storage, it can go from 2 different areas in case there's an earthquake or something in one region. You're protected in that data. This is just a real quick side thing. You know, like you work in the cloud and someone says, what is the cloud? I don't really understand what the cloud is. You know, so here's what I tell people. You know what the cloud is? Take about 1 million servers and put them in one big room and then make a bunch of those boxes all over and connect them. And now when you hit your iPhone or whatever phone you have, that's what you're talking to. That's what the cloud is. You know, it's this whole infrastructure that we've set up with all these data centers, these regions, the fiber, everything. Lots of high availability. You hear Mark Rusinovich always talks about hyperelasticity and the ability to expand. You know, everything that we run, we've almost, I forget the number, we're getting close. MSIT, Microsoft IT, is now, I think, I'm going to say 70, 80, 90% of everything that we run is on our own cloud. You know, all the Hotmail, OneDrive, Xbox, all this stuff that we've been testing and trying for years that's been out there that's grown has done that. So this is the new name. Oh, it went in white. So it actually, the writing's white. It's Microsoft Cloud Infrastructure and Operations. That's just kind of a real-world tip, but that's what GFS really is now. Someone corrected me on that. All right, a little different slide than I had the 533. I use this with customers sometimes to explain this. So resource groups, you cannot deploy anything in ARM without a resource group. It's a container. A lot of things in Azure are just container. What's another example of a container? A storage account, right? Just container, just holds stuff. But what can you do with that container? What do I use it for? Just like in Active Directory, I have OUs, right? We use for OUs for delegated administration and group policies. Well, I don't have group policies in Azure, so what do I use these containers for? Deployment. So from a design perspective, here's a little different viewpoint. Why would I make one or more resource groups? Well, the answer is, how are you deploying that application? Am I doing it for a dev environment and I want everything all in there? Think Azure Quick Start templates. How many people have done an Azure Quick Start template? It does everything for you, right? Gosh, you look familiar. Do I know you? I know you, yeah. Type me up afterward. So Quick Start template will give you the storage account, the network, everything you need, all bundled up. But is that what we do in the real world? No, the first thing I tell my new customers is, let's lay down your networks. So we create our VNets. Then we lay down our storage account. Now I want to deploy the application into something that already exists. That's a resource group for that application that then is going to connect to those things that we already planned out very carefully for our storage accounts and our networks. So organize resources, think from a deployment standpoint. Think also from... Do I got a laser pointer thing that would be cool? No, maybe? Oh, okay, wishful thinking. Think about when we're, how we place these things, how we're gonna deploy them, how we're gonna control RBAC, resource-based access control. We have a lot of built-in groups. Also, so when we think about deployment or RBAC, we have 3 levels. In the old ASM model, we only controlled administration and delegation one way, at the subscription level. You're a co-admin or a subscription admin. Now we can have specific roles, delegate responsibilities, either A, at the subscription, at the resource group, or the blue boxes, which is any Azure resource. We have built-in roles for just about everything, not everything, but usually when a service comes out, like network or storage, there's a network, and there's 3 flavors we get by default: owner, contributor, and reader. Kind of like your basic, sounds like Linux, right, type of stuff, RWX. What if we have something that doesn't exist? We can actually make custom roles. Real world example I did for my current customer, they were doing dev test labs. It actually has two roles that says, if this dev test lab exists, okay, now you can have a role that can do stuff and play in that sandbox, but there was no role to do this. So we made a custom role. So we actually went in through the roles, and if you keep clicking and clicking and clicking and go permissions, you'll actually see a breakdown. It's kind of like almost like extended AD permissions. You know, you have your standard NTFS permissions, then you get advanced permissions. Same thing in RBAC. It will get really granular, like you wouldn't believe. And you can actually pick and choose each one of those things and make a custom role either through PowerShell or CLI or REST API. Other design principle, really important. Most of my customers all want this, or they're trying to figure out how to use it. In the old model, in ASM, the only way we could roll up, and this is why I talked to a customer, did a presentation, is like, we have 56 subscriptions. I'm like, 56 subscriptions? Why would you do that? Oh, because we wanted to control administration and delegate cost. I'm like, we don't have to do that anymore. We have ARM to do that. Now, there are still things that will make a decision for why more subscriptions. There's only one, maybe two really good answers. Can anyone help me out? Two good answers for multiple subscriptions. Limits? Yeah, possibly. I got a better one, though. Express route connections. Yeah, so express route connections. But yeah, licensing, I got to talk to you about that one, so I'm not too, maybe. Billing, I can segment out through tags.
No, but I mean by, you get a dev subscription.
Yeah, so I can do tags for those same tags. I can tag it out and break it down, it will roll up in my EA portal. Or I can use the rate card API and then segment those out and filter them. So it's really cost and administration are no longer an argument for that from a design principle. Azure limits, aka.ms/azure/limits is my shortcut to that. So you need to know those. And that's really the big conversation when I talk about storage, compute, networking. How many cores you got, right? Because you can only do about so many cores per this and that. So you need to understand and know those limits. So from a design, this is a really much more important concept in this exam versus the other one. Great article on there. Delegated domain to Azure DNS, so you can create DNS zones. Azure DNS right now is not your full-blown Azure AD. My current customer is going, wow, I'd like to do conditional forwarding. Nah, you don't get that with this. Right? You want to do that, you're going to build an Azure a DNS in Azure IaaS. To think it's just pretty much public DNS, basic records. You can do quad A's, you can do A's, MX, stuff like that. But pretty simple in there that you can do. So create your zone, create your records, and then you can delegate a domain to Azure DNS as well. I have in here, and throughout all of my slides for the 533 in this one, I'll give you some sample PowerShell commands. So again, you should be familiar with these because a lot of times they'll ask you, how would I compile this? And a lot of times, particularly for PowerShell or for Azure CLI, it's pretty straightforward. What's the verb? What's the noun? What am I trying to do? Does that match? If I don't know and I see an option, well, maybe that's one that you want to study. So when you see these things, kind of look at I have links for the various commands and kind of browse through them. If you go, oh, I've never seen that one before. Well, that's the one you want to study. Okay. And these shots, I've done some recent updates to the screenshots to show you. So this is actually looking at Azure DNS in the new portal, things that we can configure. And actually, this is a good shot of everything that you'll see in almost in anything you look at. We have access control, which when I click on that, it's going to show me my roles. And when I click on the roles, it will show down the custom RBAC I can do. I can do my tags for my billing. I can do ARM locks. There's two types of locks. Can anyone tell me what the two types of locks are? Read-only and do not delete. Pretty cool stuff. Do not want to delete. Think OU, accidental deletion. That's a good thing to do. I don't want someone to accidentally delete my storage accounts. I want it to be read-only. Well, that could cause serious consequences, right, if you needed more than that. But those are locks, and you can do it programmatically through ARM templates, through REST API, through PowerShell, through Azure CLI. Automation script, so if I click on this thing for Azure DNS, I'll get the whole JSON template, boom, and I can recreate that and use that somewhere else. Network security group, we talked about this last session, and again, looking at all the properties, look at the same sort of stuff, right? We've got tags, access control, but here I add subnets, network interfaces. In cloud services, you couldn't get to the network card. In ARM, it's separated out. The IP address is separated out. It's one of the key things with ARM. They broke all these things apart. Go to a talk on Thursday on Azure Files and Disk. Guess what? Bye-bye storage accounts. Well, I won't say bye-bye, but they're going that way. They're coming up with managed disks. So, but that's not an exam, just good real world stuff. You want to take a look at that. Automation script, diagnostics, diagnostic laws. NSG, just think ACL. It's an access control list. Inbound and outbound. When and where and why do I do this from a design standpoint? Think about my tiers, whether it's three-tiered, two-tiered application, used for filtering. We do have limits. From a design perspective, I would know the limits more so in this exam than the 533, 100 NSGs per region, per subscription. Then you can put 200 roles in each NSG, but it's only TCP or UDP. I did not put on here, but I had in the last session. So you should also know about UDRs, user-defined routes, which are now are called route tables. Route table is simply IP and only outbound. Typical use case I would do is I want a lower tier to only talk to that tier, to talk to that tier, to talk to a network virtual appliance. That's why I'm going to use the route table or a UDR. Special rules I just discovered this summer. So it's these are ones, again, you might want to just make a mental note of this. There is a special IP address owned by Microsoft, which is used for load balancing, and there's a special port 1688 if you're using key management services. Don't want to block those out. Okay. So this one's a little different picture. Again, categorically, knowing the machine classifications. So we have two different tiers. These are VM pricing tiers, basic or standard, typically A family and D family. The big thing, the operative word, so again, I don't want to know the exact details of everything, but I'm just kind of highlighting certain little things. D family, you go to SSD storage. That's a good thing. And there's other categories too. I don't think the exam's going to get into G series or F series. There's another one coming out. No, I can't tell you about that, but there's another one coming out later on. Somewhere down the line, they're trying to get for some NVIDIA stuff, which is really cool. Is it out yet? The N series? Oh, it just came out? Oh, yeah, I'm behind already, okay. Just a few days. Every time I've been looking for that. Yeah, so this is looking in the old portal showing, but this picture, these are even outdated because I don't even have the F-series in there, or they call the FS. So some key points, and again, I don't want to memorize all this. Look for the exceptions. It's like when you go to A to D, and I go from basic to the standard tier. Do I get, probably the two things you're looking for most are going to be load balancing and auto scale, right? That's kind of a defining point for things that you want to have in your Azure compute. Oh, by the way, so I hate to tell you that I'm thankful that you're here, but you are missing a really great session. But you want to go back and watch at this exact hour, Corey Sanders. Anyone seen Corey Sanders speak? One of the most dynamic speakers, and he's doing all up Azure Compute right now. So really, really good session. You want to go back and check that out. So don't leave right now. That's a good one on Azure Compute. Understand, this is what I call a diamond slide. Really important, high probability stuff you should know about understanding a fault domain versus an update domain. So this is showing an example of a fault rack, a fault domain, which is actually a physical rack. If you put both your servers in that rack and that rack fails, guess what? You just lost your whole web front end. So what we want to do is you create an availability set, and that will automatically move the machines, first one on the first rack, second one on the second rack, so that'd be your fault domain. And also, it moves them across update domains. When you think about update, it's not inside the box your OS update, it's the Azure updates that we do in our fabric. So when we're updating and patching something in the fabric, we'll take down one section at a time for an update domain and ensure that you don't lose all your availability across all machines. You get a fault of 5 up domains up to 20, and the fault domains, I need to update that, but it should note it's 3 by default now that you get in ARM. Availability sets, so if you do this, and this shows, I did a picture of the options we can configure, so there's the fault domains up to 3, up to 20, select my subscription, I can use an existing resource group or create a new one, I put my location in there, 50 VMs max, which actually that may not even be possible because a storage account, if you didn't know, typically in a typical storage account, well, I guess you still do, you have in different storage accounts, but each storage account you're limited to about 30 or 40 disks depending on the size of them as well. But by getting availability set, the key operative thing is you get your SLA of 99.95 for Windows and Linux, And I actually used to have, I took it away, but I had a warning message I used to show. I actually created an availability set with one VM, and a little red thing came that says, sorry, no SLA. Didn't say it that way, but you will not get an SLA with only one machine in there. So, all right, this slide I did not have in the last one, and a lot of you are probably familiar with this, but just some basic options. So when you think about the networking different options, you know, I can connect from the public into Azure. I can go within my VNet connectivity, but then we have hybrid connectivity, so what are the options? Pretty straightforward, and I'm guessing probably the majority of you, if you're doing anything in Azure, have run into these. We have point to site. So I'm a dev guy. I want to have a secure connection and access into my Azure, so I do a point to site connection. I'm a small, medium business, right? So I want to have a site-to-site connection I can set up without any third. I could do as a Microsoft RRAS server, and I can make a connection securely and privately, make a VPN connection for a small to medium-sized enterprise. Of course, the ideal package that we want to do, it costs money, but you get a lot of perks to it, is using ExpressRoute. How many people use an ExpressRoute right now? So yeah, that's pretty about half of us here. That's great. So ExpressRoute, pretty much the same thing except for that, but a couple other things that you get to your advantage. One is, if I do a site-to-site, it's pretty much my world to my Azure world. When we go ExpressRoute, it's my world plus better connectivity and speed and a dedicated space across a private MPLS network. MPLS is the operative word from a design standpoint. See MPLS, we're talking ExpressRoute, right? But we also get the peering to other Azure services. So if I have an ExpressRoute from my on-site into the cloud, I also get that peering with other Microsoft services that I wouldn't otherwise get with just a site-to-site connection. Okay, so this is kind of a quick rundown of that big picture we saw of some of the pieces. Just being familiar with, not deep, not even, you know, much more than 100 level deep. You see a service, you're given a scenario and a design question. Which of these things I do? And I updated some options in here based on some things I was finding. So the first one is traffic manager. Traffic manager, think GLSB, global load balancing. You want to distribute the traffic, a bunch of web servers around the world. I can do multiple traffic manager profiles. So I could have a traffic manager routing between Asia Pacific, EMEA, and the Americas. But then with Americas, I could distribute between North America and South America. So that's an example of a nested profile we could do. We can do load balancing options, performance, round robin, or failover. And also media services. So things that we can do with media services requires a media services and an associated storage count. I got more in that one. I've got some deep dive slides to give you a little more information on that. Oops, sorry. So I actually installed it and started playing around, configuring, seeing some of the things you could do with that. But it's media, right? We want to stream data. We got videos that we want to do. I'm sure the Microsoft Ignite site works with media services. You walk around with your phone, and we can actually watch a live streaming video. It's probably media services. If we want to speed up that, I saw an incredible demo internally. They might do it here somewhere with a content delivery network. So this is a way to improve and cache the service. I saw a demo, something like they took like 1,000 pictures. They put it on a file server. Then they put it on an Azure Blob storage. And then they put it on CDN. It went from like half an hour on the storage to like a few minutes, you know, maybe 15, 20 minutes on a blob storage. And then CDN, it was like less than a minute. It was like, they all just popped right up. So it's a really great way to cache and accelerate that static content. Goes across global locations. High bandwidth, very dynamic, very distributed around the world. So you could actually tie together, think about it, I could actually tie together CDN with Traffic Manager to load balance those endpoints as well. Other key services, Azure Active Directory. We'll talk a little bit more about that later on, but that is identity management as a service. This is the way I tell it to my customers. Think about, a lot of people, I'm always surprised how many people can't differentiate between Azure and Azure AD. Azure is a subscription, Azure AD is the authentication mechanism, the authorization mechanism behind it all. It's entirely separate. So I can, from a design perspective, one of the things I want to do, and again, this is something that I bet 50% of our customers, I don't know about all of them, but a lot of the customers I've dealt with, they don't do right the first time, and I know you've all done this right correctly. But what they do is they get Office 365, that's the first way you get, as soon as you do that, you get Azure AD. They then go, okay, we're going to fire up an Azure AD subscription. And Bob fires it up under his account, and it's got a whole different Azure Active Directory, right? You want a common Azure Active Directory between these two. So if I'm in Office 365 or I'm in the Azure subscription, we're authenticating back to the same source of truth. But it's a continuum. It's a continuum from our on-premises Active Directory into the cloud. And of course, we can use SSL. We'll talk more about that, and we did that a little bit in the 7533 as well. We connect to it programmatically. If you're a developer, we use the Graph API. Does CRUD operations to communicate with that. You want to speed up super fast data access, we can use Azure Cache, Azure Redis, if you're not familiar with that. Gives us a 99.9% SLA for very fast managed cache service. MFA, multi-factor authentication. We use this at Microsoft, and I tell people, this is a real world and kind of an exam tip as well. How many people are not on Windows 10 where you work? Not on Windows 10. Okay, so you know that we can hack you in about 1 minute. Maybe two. So have you, anyone heard about the pass the hash attack? So Mark Simos, I think, is teaching here. He wrote the white paper. And with the pass the hash, you don't need the password. You can make a password as long as you want. I don't care. All I need is your hash. That's why we hash the hash going into Azure. If we have your hash, they can steal and authenticate and get in. At Microsoft, if I get prompted, they changed this a year ago because of a lot of the big attacks that are out there. I am not allowed to use username and password alone. I'm forced to use MFA. Right, you go to Windows 10, I love it in the Surface Pro 4, I have Windows Hello, it's tied into a TPM chip and BioFace recognition. Very, very secure. So just kind of a real world tip, and you know, from a design and architecture, you really, if you don't have Windows 10 and you don't have MFA, you probably should look at them. By default, so that's a kind of exam point. By default, administrators get an MFA for free. Right? If you want to do any more, it depends on your license and different options for that. But basic admins in Azure, you can set up MFA. Okay. Service bus, so hosted communications infrastructure. A couple buzzwords I would know. So the way that two different methods that we can do the messaging, relayed and brokered messaging. Kind of some buzzwords to know on the exam for that. Azure batch, run batch processes, right? Large scale, parallel, high performance computing. We can do job scheduling with a bunch of VMs. And I think this is still true, so I'm going to put this note in there. It's scripted command line driven only. That may have changed, but I think for the exam, that would probably still be true. Okay. All right, I have a couple of these. I'm just going to click through these because I have to watch my time because I have a lot of content. These are just kind of test yourself questions that you can go through later on, and I will post these this afternoon. And these are the measure up reference links I talked about. So where I went through the exam, I found the links to the answers, and I figured it's nothing confidential because it's just public links. So these are all related topics that you can browse through later on. Okay. Next category, securing resources with hybrid identities. There's a hybrid identity for you. Talk about managed identities, hybrid identities, identity providers, data security, and a little bit more about rollback, RBAC, but I think we've covered that pretty well. So Azure AD on-premises versus Azure AD. So what are some of the differences, right? We've talked about some of that already. We talked about group policies on Active Directory. We don't have group policies in the cloud, right? The way we manage it, the way we control it, it's all a little bit different. We use the Graph API in the cloud to do programmatic access. We talked about that already. We have OAuth capabilities. I think they're adding that in 2016, maybe. I haven't gone to that session yet. For authorization for web apps in the tenant. We also support in Azure AD OpenID Connect, which is an authorization protocol for single sign-on. And kind of a key word for this, too, and Vittorio Battacci, who's here, he does great sessions on this stuff. And what it exactly does is OpenID Connect extends OAuth 2.0 for use as an authentication protocol. Okay. Yeah, just those are some old pictures. I should take those out because it's all in the new portal now. Okay, we had this one in the last session. So again, real quick point about this is that we have two types of SSO, one being same sign-on and one being single sign-on. The top is using Azure Active Directory Connect, which leverages Azure AD synchronization. That's where we're synchronizing our identities from on-premises in the cloud. The passwords are not sent up. It's a hash of the password, as we said. So if I log in, I'm actually going to use a cloud account that's been synchronized from my on-premises. But down below, if I'm using ADFS, which we now can deploy using Azure AD Connect, and we will also get Azure AD Connect Health to monitor the health of the ADFS servers. So in the ADFS Federation scenario, the difference is user attributes are synchronized, but authentication goes back to the source of truth, which is your on-premises AD servers. Okay, these are a couple new slides I didn't have in the other session. Yeah, quick water. These are exam objectives for this, about what we offer for encryption in transit versus encryption at rest, what Azure can do versus what you, the customer, needs to do. I would focus on, for the exam, what Azure does, and then, you know, if the customer's not doing these things, then we need to turn it on. So, but Azure, by default, most encryptions is communication is encrypted. We do everything through HTTPS, and we also support FIPS 140-2 ciphers. The customer then can choose HTTPS for REST API, make HTTPS endpoints for applications, and encrypt the traffic from the web client by using TLS on IIS. Encryption at REST, we do lots of things. We have BitLocker encryption, now built in. It used to be cloud in was the only option, but now it's baked in that you can do. Third-party solutions, SQL Server. There's a couple acronyms I didn't have up here I thought about that you should know about. What's CLE? Column level encryption, RLE, row level encryption, and TDE, which is up there, transparent data encryption. So there's a different mechanism that SQL Server does. Files and folders, so interesting. This is a conversation I have with my customers when we're talking about various aspects, is inside the box versus outside the box. When I'm an Azure consultant talk about Azure stuff, I don't talk about inside the box. What you do inside the box is probably what you did in premises, right? When I'm talking about outside the box, what I can do within Azure or what Azure does by default, that's outside the box. EFS is inside the box, has nothing to do really with Azure, but it's a feature that we can leverage in that Windows server. BitLocker encryption for drives. In fact, if you upload a VHD, it has to be BitLocker encrypted. Applications, we can do lots of things with .NET, crypto APIs, RMS SDKs for encryption as well. So we talked a little bit about RBAC. The only thing I didn't elaborate on was the three default roles you get. And again, so know where you can apply it at subscription level, at a resource group, or at the individual resource. And by default, we get contributors, owners, and readers. There's predefined built-in roles for just about everything. But as we mentioned before, you can make your custom RBAC roles when and where needed. But this is always kind of the concept of least privilege. We always want to give the least amount of privilege necessary with the least amount of effort. So if there's a rule that already exists, you want to use that. And a really cool feature about this, if you haven't played with this much, that I love. So here's one. In Windows Server, anyone done ABE, access-based enumeration? So a lot of people don't know about that, but I'm an old Novell guy. In Novell, you couldn't see what you didn't have access to. And that's what ABE does. And that's what RBAC does. So if someone goes in the RBAC portal, and they only have network, all they can see, they may be see some things, but they can only really see the network stuff in there. So it kind of provides that filtered view for them. All right, so this is some stuff I added from last Ignite that we didn't have or weren't talking about. I don't really know that it will be in there, but it falls under those categories, so you should just be familiar with it, what it is, what it does. Hopefully you've heard about B2C. I think this is from Active Directory. Azure Active Directory is going to be one of the hottest things this next year or two for folks, because this solves a lot of problems. I spent projects that took a year and a half to do the same thing that I can clickety-click and at least get it up and running, you know, fairly quickly. You know, tweaking it take a lot more time, but it's much, much faster than large infrastructures we used to do. So B2C, business consumer, so essentially think social identity providers. I can have Facebook ID, Google all log in, test and try, put up password policies, very seamless user experience that will change in form factor design to my phone, to my tablet, to my PC. We support MFA, the modern protocol support for OpenID Connect and OAuth 2. And again, also supports the Graph API for communications. But again, have a link for you. They all work the same, aka.ms/azure/something. Gee, wonder what the B2B one is. So do a /B2B and you'll get Azure B2B as well. I did not include that one because that at the time, that was preview. If there's, I said there's more of a chance this might come up B2B, I don't think so yet. That's still really, really new. OMS, so from a management standpoint, so Operations Management Suite, lots of sessions coming up this week. This is kind of our cloud-based solution that we can actually tie in and use, not only for Azure, but also even with Amazon Web Services or integrate in with System Center Operations Manager in our private clouds. So it gathers information, cloud-based service, and we can do a lot for monitoring and managing a lot of our stuff that we normally would have just done through System Center, but it will actually enhance and augment System Center, as well as gathering information from these other disparate sources. Okay, testy questions, you can test yourself later. We're about a minute of slide here. So again, reference links, those are all from the practice exams that you'll wanna check out. Next one, category, storage data access. Take a look at these. So be familiar with the different types of data storage options, and I got a little table, you can read that later on, but you know, so from a design exam, you know, they may see something that we want to do, something from a relational database. So what are my choices? Are those choices in the choices of the exam question I have to ask? Do we require key value pairs or graph? So those are just kind of categorically, and a great article there, an introduction to Microsoft Azure Storage. Security options. We talked about it more in 7533. So again, it really pays whether they're gonna take this exam or that exam, because I go some deeper areas in that, and then here not so much. But we talked about the shared access signature, and essentially that's if I wanna share out access to that storage, and it's a time-bound URI. That URI is not encrypted though. Someone grabs that URI, and anyone can get to it. So that's one of my security concerns I tell people you need to be aware of. But otherwise, from my data storage, I have a storage count key. So for example, if I want to use something like Windows Storage Explorer, one of the things I'll have to do to connect that to my Azure subscription is to have that storage key included with it. Okay, mobile apps. So again, some basics, high-level things to know about. We can create and consume mobile apps. Here's a couple of points that I want to highlight of things to know. When you choose the back end, you have a choice of JavaScript or .NET. Once you do that, you cannot go back unless you're going to destroy it all and recreate. So you have to make that decision of which way you're going to go. Mobile apps are globally unique names. There are some things in Azure that are named upon your resource group or your subscription. Other things are more global, like storage accounts are globally unique names. Mobile apps, globally unique names. Media services must be globally unique names. Like I tried to do a media service called Mark and it wouldn't let me because someone else had used it. So very important point to make. And again, all fall in with the standard Azure subscription limits. The characters, you know, that's not a thing I need to know in most cases. I will tell you about this from an exam point and also real world. The one that stands out in my mind about naming, storage accounts are the one thing. No caps, no special characters, all small characters. So you guys run into this. But if not, be aware of that, because that will bite you. But you'll find it as soon as you try to make one and say, nope, can't do these things. Mobile apps got to have some sort of database, so you can use Azure SQL. Lots of new stuff coming out in Azure SQL, so if you're interested, check that out. Affinity groups, that's old. We don't do that anymore. So data is stored in tables for that. We can also integrate offline sync capabilities into an application. And what else here? So we have SQLite for Windows 8 phone projects. You can change the processor architecture, x86, x64, ARM. And in Visual Studio, we can use NuGet packages as well. So again, knowing what it is, what it does, some basics about these, that's about the level of information you need to know about these. This slide's probably a bit more important for the mobile apps, I think, if there's one I'd focus on, is implementing push notification services. So it's actually called WNS. The first time I wrote it, I wrote WINS. I'm like, no, it can't be WINS. Well, that's long gone. But WINS stands for Windows Notification Service, which is the Microsoft's version of push notification services. So you have to register your application with that and then configure mobile services to make it work, update the app, update the service scripts, and then put it in the data and push notifications. So this is kind of an example, an exam. Where they'll have quite often a step-by-step process. So I do these every once in a while to make that highlight for you. They'll say, what are the things we got to do? Grab these things over here and drag them in the right order. So it's very common. I've seen that with PowerShell and Azure CLI type stuff as well. If we're going to do push notifications, we do notification hubs to broadcast. We can use tags for different types of categories. And even there's a template feature for localization for different languages you can do. You can also push notifications to a segment for particular authenticated users if you want to as well. Using a web API, we can implement a custom API, publish, or to external partner. Each API has one or more operations, can be added to one or more products. Then you subscribe to the product, which contains the API, and then call the API's operation. Again, kind of a step-by-step of how to implement that. We can also scale using Azure Web Apps. So know the concepts of scaling up versus scaling out. These are options you get in the configuration that you can do. But again, this could be a design scenario exam where they ask you about what we can do. So if I scale up, it's pricing tiers. I started with a free and I'm missing all these features, so I need to go to a standard or premium account. I can scale out, which is number increasing the increase of the CPUs, the scheduling performance rules. Be familiar with webhooks. Anyone use webhooks before? Show of hands, anyone? Very small number usually. So webhooks are really cool, so I can have basically that notification be sent out to some sort of notification service. All right, so I get a pager or an email or whatever, or maybe a third-party product to take that and consume that information. So again, simple URL, aka.ms/azure/webhooks. Check that out. Service plan, so I made this one last session. Again, not that I want you to memorize all these things. I probably should highlight a couple things, but I look for the breakpoints. So probably the big thing is here in the service plan, I would focus on SLA because that's going to be a requirement in my design scenario. So to get an SLA, I got to be at basic level. So I get 99.9. If I want to go to, you know, 3.5, I got to go to standard or premium. So that would probably stand out in my thing. And then also, see, free and shared, you know, you can't scale up to your instances. App service environment, that's probably one I would note for premium that's only supported in the premium service plan. And this is a slide I didn't have in the last session, which is a nice graphic to kind of understand the app service. And this was a interesting point with my current customer, and we were discussing about web apps versus an app services versus app service environment. And last slide I talked about, all that an app service environment is, it's two things. One is it's the premium version of an app service, but two, the reason why it's premium, you're getting that thing built in your VNet, not in a multi-shared environment. So that's why it will take 2 to 3 hours to do an app service environment when you fire it up. But app services can contain, so it's interesting, they just changed this recently in the portal. I used to be able to, if you don't know this, in the browser, I could click, the little plus mark to add a new service. And I used to be able to add in web apps, but no longer. You have to do app service environment, and then I can add a web app inside. I can put mobile apps, logic apps, and API apps. So these are all part of the Azure App Service. If we want that in my own VNet with my own IP, a private IP and control it, I want to do that within an app service environment, which is the premium SKU of an app service plan. Designing data access strategy for hybrid connections. So things that we can do to enhance, we talked about the VPN options with ExpressRoute site to site and point to site. We can also use Service Bus for asynchronous messaging. We talked about the middle ones there, an option to join VMs to domains or cloud services. I do not think I would even know or worry about or think about on this exam cloud domain join. You know, Windows 10, we can join in Azure AD. I don't think that's going to be in this exam at all. Okay, this is some new stuff I added in on the media services to help out a little bit. I thought I had another graphic in here. Yeah, so what it is, again, scalable media. There's a couple key points here I want to highlight in this section. So what it can do, so on-demand or streaming capabilities, if we do streaming, it's a four-step process of how it works. When you think kind of step-by-step, we have to ingest the information, it previews it, then it stores, then it delivers it. So kind of a step-by-step thing to know about. Also, the common protocols I would be familiar with, because in a design scenario, they'll say we had this and this and this, which one's going to be good? Common protocols, MPEG-Dash, Smooth, HLS, HDS. I have no idea what any of those are, what they do, but from exam point, I know those are options I'm going to look for. If they say it, then I need media services. And again, we can also tie this together with content delivery network to scale to millions. And I think I added a kind of a cool new picture for some other options here. Let me see if I got it here. So this was interesting. So when I added this in the new portal this week, it says, please note, you can only choose local redundant, geo-redundant, or read-only access. So what's missing from that? ZRS, zone redundant, so no ZRS option in this one to do. And also, I did this, so I actually found it. So I made an Ignite Media services. The performance, and this I thought was interesting, the premium's grayed out, so I highlighted over the I, and it said, well, premium is only for VMs. But I'm like, why did you put the button there? So I'm thinking that maybe it's something that might be coming around the corner, but I'd say for now, premium's not an option. But there's my replication options, and then, did I do one more, I think? Oh, I guess not. Okay, I thought I had another picture in there. Okay, so for this section, again, the resource links, you'll take a look at those when you go back through. Next section, design advanced application. Let's take a look at these. Check my time here. So we got 23 slides in 19 minutes. All right. Got to keep it on track. Design high-performance computing. Actually, what I'm going to do is I'm going to show, I put a graphic in here, which is much better. So this is the evolution of showing, going from one extreme to the other. So we start back on the left-hand side of the picture is all on-premises, HPC pack on-premises. To the right extreme is the PaaS, right? So it's going from on-premises to IaaS to PaaS. So this is kind of a side-by-side chart. Again, I mean, we all like to think we want to go in the perfect world and not manage everything and then let it all go to PaaS, but it may not be the right answer. Don't always jump for the newest, latest, greatest thing on this exam. Look at what they require and what they have and what they're asking in that design scenario. It can make a difference. So we have from on-premises to a hybrid scenario that will run on-premises and cloud or both. The IaaS is all cloud, right? And then the Azure Batch service is all, it's entirely a PaaS solution where you're abstracted away from the VMs, the updating, the patching, the management, the maintenance of all those machines, and it's purely a PaaS service. So that's what I'd kind of focus on for this thing as far as knowing about the batch evolution. Creating long-running applications, so we can do worker roles and PaaS. Worker roles, you should know what they are. They're asynchronous, they're the process jobs that run. You will not find that, you will not see that in the portal anywhere. You create these by going into Visual Studio, and then you can add it in. Versus a web role, you should be familiar with that. Web role, the giveaway is, it's an instance of an IIS web server, right? And by the way, in the real world, this is not where you should be. This is old world exam. So, I mean, this is only 6 months, a year ago, people were doing this. And actually, most of our services in the cloud right now, this is where it lives. But the future is app services and service fabric. And I didn't even go to service fabric because I don't think that will be in the exam yet, but maybe next round when they update, they'll talk about it. When you're making long-running applications, good design practice, make stateless components, use things like Windows Communication Foundation and REST APIs. Some more quick services, again, what they are, machine learning, ML, should be familiar with that. Again, predictive models, forecasting, we've all heard these things about how, hey, you know, we predicted the winner of the World Cup, right? They used Azure machine learning to do that. And they did that in tying in with big data. We all know about big data. But in particular for the exam, be familiar with Azure HD Insight is a service that deploys and provisions Azure Hadoop clusters and uses Hortonworks data platform distribution. So do I need to know much more than that? No, I need to be familiar with those and that they're tied together with big data. We talked about media services. There's also Azure Search, which basically is a cloud-based search service that can delegate server and infrastructure management and populate search data and access from an app for you. I added this because I've had a lot of people say this is something that we should probably bring up a little bit more, Azure Machine Learning. So this is kind of a, I'm not going to read through it all, but just kind of a step-by-step process you want to take a look at. Also, I created some links for you, Azure/ML, and also studio.azurerem.net, where you can actually kind of set this up and play with it and take a look at it. But understand this process of how it works with data collection and management, the machine learning service, and the embedded machine learning model. So you want to take a look at those links and study that picture. That's a good one. And when you're doing that, and actually when you go into that website, this is kind of the process, and again, trying to give you, and it's actually not a 1 through 5, but it's a 1 ABC and 2 and 5, so a bunch of steps to create a model. But you create the model, basically, you train the model, and then you score and test the model, and that's how Azure Machine Learning works in a very simplistic fashion. But we got a couple good links for you there. Okay, review questions for you to test yourself later. Reference links. Anyone name that ship? USS Missouri. Yeah. Design Azure web apps. So we covered some of this here. Some other key points that a lot of people don't know, if you've never done this, play with this, it's pretty darn fast. To deploy these things are near instantaneous deployment. So a lot of the times the question you get, what is the best answer of these, right? You know, so the best answer is, you know, how much time do you have, how much cost, what are our Azure limits that we have to consider? Time's not a factor for this. It's near instantaneous deployment. We have these things, which I didn't have in here, I think we've talked about, but deployment slots, right? So I can have pre-production slots, and then if I build something in dev and then I want to move it to test, I just swap the slot. It's instantaneous, and there's very little downtime with that at all. Other things to know, we can have custom domain names. We have custom SSL certs for those custom domain names. If we do that, we have to upload the PFS certificates, but it's only in basic and standard modes. We talk about web jobs or background processing can be used to help scale that up. If we do VMs, Affinity Group, I got to change that one, sorry. That should be, the Affinity Groups are old. That was old. That's not going to be in the exam anymore, but that's just the regions. So by doing VMs in an availability set, that will prevent simultaneous restarts. If your hardware fails because the availability set will span it across the update domains and the fault domains. Cloud services, I think you're going to see less and less in this exam. But the one thing, probably the best link, I have this linked in both of the sessions. This link right here, it's a graphic. I actually have it in this one. Here, I can show you. So I grabbed it for this deck. This graphic is probably one of the best things to compare and contrast when and why I would use virtual machines versus cloud services versus web apps. So when you're looking at the blue bar, which is the amount of control, it's almost like the discussion I have with everyone. Should we go IaaS or should we go PaaS? You see these in the conversations here. How much control do you want to have? How much do you want to manage? So control, you got a VM, you own it, you patch it, you update it, you install everything, configure, a lot of work, right? You go to cloud services, a little bit less, and you go to web apps, even less. Agility, this is the thing that's driving all my customers trying to get to PaaS. They usually start in IaaS, and then they kind of work their way over. But it's all about agility. A lot of my customers are going, the first thing I ask them, why are we going to cloud? We want to get our applications out there faster, and we want to empower the developers. That's what we hear all over these conferences. We want to empower the developers to develop these things faster so we can keep ahead of the competition. So if agility is a concern in a design exam, web apps is your answer. Interesting, so the session that you're going to watch and go back and see from Corey Sanders that's happening right now, he does a great overview on this about the pros, cons, advantages, and there's another PaaS session too about that. When you think about web apps, it's really more in the PaaS where service fabric's kind of bleeding on both sides. So some things are not clearly delineated between PaaS and IaaS because they're either trying to decide where they want to go or they leverage both things. Because service fabric, this is just real-world tip, but service fabric actually leverages the virtual machine skill sets, which is definitely IaaS, but the applications span over into microservices, which start spanning more into the PaaS side a little bit. Okay, so another little graphic I've kept in here, but some things about the websites, cloud apps, the virtual machines, so web apps support .NET, Node, PHP, Python, cloud apps, those languages, the virtual machines, and again, how much you manage versus what Azure manages, which the other graphic showed you. Oh, did you want to get a picture of that? I'll get it. I'll go back there. You're going to get the deck. It's going to be up there in about an hour. So, okay. Deploy web apps. So we had this in the last session, but we can use for web deploy, use Visual Studio. You can also use an orchestration engine for continuous deployment called Kudu. If you're not familiar with that, my current customer is using that. We can also do FTP, FTPS, and Windows Explorer. FileZilla is another one. Or you can manually copy stuff up into the web apps. Different deployment methods, you should be familiar with those. For business continuity, we can use web apps and SQL. They're talking about this here, so this is a big concern of the customers and something you should know from a design standpoint for this exam, that on the Azure SQL, it's only a public IP address. I know some of you want that changed, but they are working on it, and there's a solution coming out soon to a theater near you called VNet Tunneling. So they've talked about that here already, where you can actually have on-premise. So if you have a site-to-site or express route connection and you want to connect privately to that Azure SQL, they will have a private connection. So that's just a real-world tip that you'll want to look into with the Azure SQL sessions. But for the exam-wise, right now it's only a public IP address, so you have to route through there. But on that note, and I don't know if this would be in the exam, a lot of people don't realize this. Do you know that when you talk anything in Azure and anything in Azure, you don't go on the IP and on the public internet? You go across our wide area network. A lot of people don't. They go, oh, it's got a public IP address. Yeah, but what it does, it gets to the edge of our WAN. It says, oh, I know where that is. It goes back down here. So it actually won't traverse the public network if it's any Azure service. So obvious things, scale for DR, design your data tier, break this down, Azure SQL has a built-in high availability. So not much more than that. And some reference links on you from the exam prep. More on monitoring business continuity. And so this is the stuff, if you don't use System Center, you know, you want to wake up and say, oh, okay, so this is what they call this in System Center. And it's really just kind of categorically, what are the different things that System Center has and can do? Because they're going to ask you about that stuff. So Configuration Manager, kind of what it sounds like. So that'd be SCCM. But they never put the acronym, so it'd be System Center Configuration Manager for Client Device and Application, Operations Manager, Monitoring and Alerting, Virtual Machine Manager, move VMs, shift them from data centers. Service Manager, ITIL based, if you guys are familiar with ITIL, the IT Service Management Library. Data Protection Manager is what it sounds like, Backup and Disaster Recovery, and of course Orchestrator, what it sounds like, Workflow Engine. So these are options to consider in the orchestration of your services using System Center. And it's all good for managing for both private cloud, public cloud, and service provider cloud. So heard a few people using their service providers here. This could be something they could leverage as well. And we do it, we eat our own dog food, right? So when we look at how we manage and control the fabric of Azure, guess what we use? We use System Center for everything. Designing monitoring strategies, so again, leverage the built-in abilities of either System Center or what's in there in Azure. It's all over the place for diagnostics and monitoring. I got this thing in Global Service Manager. It's still an exam objective, although I found, anyone ever use Global Service Manager? Anyone? Crickets? Anyone? No? Okay. So I've asked this all over internal Microsoft, and they go, yeah, there's a couple people out there somewhere, but it's on the exam objective. I have no idea why. We talked about System Center capabilities. This is a good real world and exam world. If you don't know about management packs, I don't care if you love System Center, use it or not, the management packs are really good for one reason. They make them for DNS, they make them for ADFS, they make them for IIS, they make it for all a bunch of Windows services. What it will do, you can download these white papers, and it will tell you the desired configuration and recommendations for monitoring that thing. You can use that anywhere you want, right? It's great information. So I tell people, grab those management packs. And of course, if you have System Center, then you would want to leverage those. And it's beautiful because it will just set all these things exactly the way they should be and tell you to watch these and give you alerts when those things go awry. Third-party tools, third-party tools not going to be so much in the exam. Oh, good old WSUS, Windows Update Services, so we can use that with Config Manager, Custom Solutions, and other third-party products. So I'm not going to belabor this one. I don't. It's on the exam, but all it is, it's a large-scale, massive monitoring service, global service monitor, but I think it's on its way out, so I don't know if it's still in the exam, but I got the picture there about what it does. Azure Backup, talk about this. It's a cloud-based thing about NT Backup, but it's in the cloud. Works very nicely. So scenario is we want to get rid of tape backup. Okay, what are my options? Azure Backup's an option. Loaded with security controls in it, decreased management overhead. Very, very simple to set up and configure. I've done it a couple times for customers. This picture is really good. Again, not going to read through it all. Getting close to the end here. But ASR, Azure Site Recovery, so again, whether you use it or not, got a note for the exam. What are the scenarios, use cases we can do? So get this, Hyper-V to Hyper-V, Hyper-V to Hyper-V across storage area networks, Hyper-V to Azure, VMware, or physical to VMware, and VMware or physical to Microsoft Azure. So again, why would I need to use this? We have to back up and do recovery of these scenarios. Does it fit under one of these five buckets? Then it could be your answer for the question you have. And again, not going to read this, but just highlighted. So this was a kind of a good thing. So Store Simple, if you're not familiar with that, that's actual physical hardware device. If you have the latest, greatest 8000 series, you actually get a virtual appliance version with it too, and you have multiple of those, which is nice and nifty. But this shows a side-by-side comparison of Store Simple versus ASR versus Azure Backup. So where ASR is really good at a lot of things like disaster recovery, Azure, you see the top four boxes, a lot of red up there. So that's where Store Simple kind of takes over and Azure Backup takes over. So if I was going to learn and look at anything, kind of a mental note, that would probably be the exception that I'd look at in this chart. Azure Automation, so we had this in the 533. What do we do? What can we use? DSC, we can use Desired State Configuration, which is came out with Server 2012. We also have Chef Puppet we can use with third-party solutions. Chef has a lot of recipes that are out there that we can leverage. Azure Automation, I would know these basic steps. I did not highlight these in the 533, but you have to create an Azure Automation account. That's required first. Then you import a runbook, or you can create a runbook and import it in. You then publish it, and then you schedule a job. So that's kind of the basic process of how to do that. Lots of good stuff for Azure Automation. If you have your own MSDN account and you want to save stuff, right, you can make one and shut down all your servers every night. You know, it's just simple stuff like that. It's really powerful. Okay. And again, review questions. I'll let you do those for later. Reference links. Hey, I'm just in the last couple minutes here. All right, so we took the entire exam objectives, we broke it down section by section. I will post these slides with all those reference links. Good stuff for you. So hopefully that will get you over the hump of that 3 to 5 questions, lots of insights, some tips and tricks. I listed out, so these are the other kind of related certification exam preps. Just do a search for cert exam if you're interested in anything else in the Ignite site, and these are all out there. There's Cloud's hands-on workshops. If that doesn't work for you, you can fire up a trial account for free for 30 days and just, you know, go to town and just make sure you shut down the VM so you don't rack up a big bill on there. But you can get in these, and when I tell people these workshops they have here, you don't have to follow a script. You can just get in there and get in the subscription and start, playing around, look at the options, click the little eyes, look at the information, see what the configurations are, look at the subscription level versus the resource group level versus the Azure resource and the properties of those things. So that's it, folks. I'm out of time and out of deck, and I thank you very much. I wish you the best of luck. Please come up for any questions you have afterward, and please fill out the eval. Thanks a lot. Have a great night.